Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left at Captain Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Hey, good morning there, Marky.
Hey, Francis, how are you doing today?
I'm well indeed, thanks. Hey, listen, we have an email that I want to read because I thought it was very amusing. This sent to me from Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Either that or it's Bartlesville and the guy says, okay. I don't know it, but I think it's Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Hello and greetings from a podcast listener from Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Just wanted to let you know what an influence you guys have been in my life. You know, I got the sinking feeling this email could go either way when I read that. The other night, sick of watching TV, I suggested my wife and I sit down and listen to one of your podcasts. That, a parenthetical, does that tell you how much there is to do in Bartlesville, Oklahoma?
Sadly, it does.
Sort of a backhanded compliment there, Scott. Just to do something different, we listened to your show entitled Grass-Fed Beef. Now, I've been cut off from meat. Thank you.
Although, we didn't intend to cut you off from meat.
Although I enjoy listening to your podcast overall, my wife really honed in on this particular episode. She told me today we are not having any more meat until I find better alternatives to beef, chicken, and pork. So I'll be clicking on the heritage link on your website. That's a big plug for our advertisers, thank you, to find out where to get grass-fed beef. Now, if I can just get her to listen to the food and sex show you did not that long ago.
Thank you, Scott. You did amuse us.
That's from Scott.
Here's the deal. If you send us an email that makes us laugh, we will read it on the air. That was a really good one.
I bring the food and sex show on dates now.
I am going to warn you though. We're going to talk about today about pig farming and how it's done. Maybe you shouldn't have your wife listen to the show.
Don't let your wife listen to the show. Actually, no. We're going to talk later on. We're going to have a great author on
Nathaniel Johnson
on to talk about an article he wrote called "Swine of the Times" that appeared in Harper's, and it's a great article on modern pig production and what happens in the agribusiness farms. But we also there are alternatives coming out there, and the alternatives only exist because, well, Scott, your wife makes you click on Heritage Foods USA and go support the farmers who are raising animals in a way that makes good food and is humane to the animals.
I'm sure we're going to have a really serious show because it's a pretty serious topic, but there are a lot of alternatives out there, and we'll get into some of them later in the show.
And, you know, actually, beef, grass-fed beef that's not frozen is the hardest to find, although it's accessible. But you can find all sorts of other stuff like lamb and pork.
And frozen grass-fed beef is out there, too. You can find it pretty easily.
Well, let's talk about the easiest way to get your hands on some natural meat products. There have been a lot of articles recently about hot dogs. Nationally, the hot dog market is declining, although we eat a lot of hot dogs in this country. Mm-hmm. However, the tiny sliver of the market of grass-fed hot dogs and organic hot dogs is increasing. And so there's a little hope for the growing dog. I don't know what that means exactly. I said that by accident.
I'm not going down that road.
I have a couple articles in front of me. Let's pick this one from Kim Severance of the New York Times. In a country increasingly enamored of specialty sausage and natural beef, hot dog sales have slumped. However, the new models are what's happened is people have hit upon a way to make a hot dog that's natural and grass-fed and not use nitrites and nitrates, which are things that most natural people want to avoid.
And the other thing is, if you are really a believer in this type of food, you do need to make sausages and hot dogs and some other kinds of either force meats or salamis or things like that with some of the other parts of the animal. It can't all be pork chop and pork loin.
Well, let me say what the big breakthrough has been in hot dogs. To make your hot dog red and juicy and springy, people use nitrites and nitrates, which, you know, a lot of people don't believe in. And so when you don't use these things, the hot dog sort of looks kind of brown, and it's not as springy. Well, there's a new way that people are making hot dogs. A number of people are making hot dogs, and they're using celery juice. And it's basically a combination of celery juice, lactic acid, and sea salt that works like the nitrites. Mm-hmm.
As a preservative.
Now, which sounds better for you? Hold on. Your kid's sitting at the table. You've got to give him a spoonful of something. Nitrites or celery juice? Which do you choose? It's
you
a quiz.
You know the part of Americana that I really don't understand? You know, 75...
The entire middle of it between the two coasts.
Stop it. So, Bartersville, Oklahoma is listening to you, so shut up.
I know. I don't get it.
But we invented a refrigerator in order to keep things from perishing longer, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like since the advent of that machine,
right,
we've needed to.
Why do we then need to invent the Twinkie?
We then needed to invent foods that are shelf stable forever.
Oh.
Why did those two things happen simultaneously? You would think that the invention of the refrigerator would have caused us to say, "Oh, good, now we can have meat in our refrigerator for 3 or 4 days and not worry about it."
Here's some good news. Here's some good news. Applegate Farms just came out with the Great Organic Hot Dog. They look just like the plump, salty, chemically pink dog served on buns at sporting events and from street carts. The suggested price is $4.99 a pound. That's only a buck or so more than ballpark Franks. Mm. The thing about these organic Franks, Neiman Ranch, Bill Nyman, he makes a super high-end specialty dog.
Really good hot dog, though,
of course,
I got to tell you.
Of course, it costs you about $5 a dog.
But, of course, it doesn't slow us down.
Not us. No, we're going to have the Neiman ones. You guys can have the Applegate Farms. But if you want to, like, work your way in slowly... Applegate Farms. Now, the thing about the Applegate Farms, great organic hot dog, delicious, and only $4.99 a pound, pretty good. They come from Uruguay. The meat comes from Uruguay. And some of the other folks who are looking into the high-end hot dog market look for stuff that's local. Like Bill Nyman stuff is most of it sold locally, although you can buy Nyman Ranch hot dogs on their website, which you can find on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Another local producer here in the Northeast is Dine's Farm. They're in the Catskill Mountains. And you can find them, like if you go to Sparky's in Brooklyn or on Bleecker Street in Manhattan, you can get a Dine's Farm dog for $2.50. You can also go to I think you can buy them online, and you can buy them in some specialty markets. So that's about being local. And remember, when we fly meat in from so far away, we spend a lot of fossil fuels getting our meat from farm to plate.
Not just that. One of the things that we're trying to create with this whole change in the way we eat and change in the way we do things is that we do want to support some American farmers, so we do have some diversity and different types of farmers in different places here in the United States.
You know, another thing that the article brings up, which I think is really great. Oh, well, I'll give you one other purveyor. They're on the West Coast. They're in California. Sue Moore and Larry Bain have a Let's Be Frank cart.
And we'll put all these things up on the website just to make it easy for you. I know that we kind of ran through a bunch of different names for you.
Sue and Larry Bain have their Let's Be Frank cart where they sell these kinds of hot dogs out in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can go to letsbefrankdogs.com, which we'll put up. And, you know, the nice thing about having these hot dogs is a lot of people aren't going to shell out a lot of cash to experiment with a porterhouse steak.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know...
Right. If you spent $4 or $5 on your pound of hot dogs and you don't like them that well, feed them to the dog.
And maybe you'll see what it's all about. And I think this is a great way, an entry level for people to get in. And those specialty dogs, those expensive dogs from people like Nyman Ranch and Heritage Foods USA, they're pretty awesome.
Yeah, they're really special.
They're like some kind of great sausage. But these that we're talking about today, these less expensive ones that we're talking about today, are designed to be more like the chemical dogs that you're used to, which are indeed quite tasty. All right, we'll be back in just a few minutes, and we'll be talking more about. Actually, we'll take it from dogs to pigs. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Nathaniel Johnson. Nathaniel is a freelance journalist in San Francisco. He covers a variety of topics, especially the nexus of science, technology, environment, culture, and agriculture. Sounds like the perfect guest for our show, doesn't it?
Nathaniel, how are you? Welcome to the show today.
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Nathaniel, we've read some of your stuff. We had brought to our attention. We actually had emailed to us as soon as it came out an article to bring it to our attention. An article you wrote for Harper's, which was wonderfully entitled "Swine of the Times: The Making of the Modern Pig." Love that title there, "Swine of the Times."
Yeah, you knew how to catch our eye at the very least. I don't know if you caught everybody's eye, but you certainly. That's we knew that it was an article we had to read.
So you got this 9-page article, which when I printed it out on my computer was a 24-page article on pork, and you got it published. There's a feat right there. How did that happen?
Well, I think that I was able to take something that's right in front of our eyes. You know, everybody, it's the food that we eat is so close to us that we, you know, don't even think about it. And I was able to find something that was a little bit unusual about it that people don't really know about, and that was how pork begins. And sort of take that and explore that and then go off for 25 pages.
Well, now let's talk about what caught your attention with pork and you know how you came to be interested in the topic and what you found maybe disturbing about it.
Yeah, well, I was out working for a small newspaper in this town, tiny little town of Burley, Idaho, and one of my friends was working at a large hog farm on the outskirts of town. And we were getting together for a beer, and she started telling me a little bit about what she was doing, and she was saying, oh, my gosh, you know, I have such a hard time. These sows trample me into the floor all day. They just really get nervous when I start to stimulate them. And I sort of put down my beer, and I said,
said, I'm a little nervous.
and so she proceeded to tell me that what she did for a living was to inseminate pigs, and as she explained this, it's this very elaborate process that you have to go through and to get the pigs excited and to do all this stuff to make sure that they conceive. And so this just sort of keyed me off. You know, here's this topic of sex and food mm-hmm. and death, you know, these animals have to go through in order to get on our plates, and it just sort of opened up this whole new world for me it was right in front of me, right, you know, on my bacon in the morning every day, but I never really thought about it in that way.
Now we're talking about, and what we're talking about is how modern agribusiness works and modern pig farming works, is that the pigs are artificially inseminated.
Right.
Okay, and we'll get back to how exactly that's accomplished in a little bit. But why are we artificially inseminating our pigs? Why don't we just let pigs be pigs, as it were?
Well, that's a good question. The original reason that pigs were artificially inseminated is that you could control very precisely what genes they got.
Mm-hmm.
So you could take genes from a boar and match it with a sow. Now,
but couldn't you just do that by getting this boar and the sow together and letting them?
And that's how things used to happen in the old days, is that you'd have a farmer with a great boar, and he'd take it around to all his neighbors, and they'd pay him to bring it around. And that worked fine in the old days. But now you can't bring one pig from one farm onto another farm.
Why
it's
is that?
Not done.
Why is that?
That's because pigs are very susceptible to disease now. The pigs on one farm will all live indoors in almost hospital-like settings. It's almost like a lab. There's huge biosecurity measures. The people going in and out have to shower before they go in. They shower after they come out.
One of the things we know about a hospital, it's one of the places that you're most likely to get sick.
Exactly, and so if you bring a boar onto these premises, you'd have to scrub it down. You know, it would be carrying all these diseases that all these microbes that the pigs inside this laboratory-like setting weren't used to. And the other thing is that all of the pigs have almost exactly the same genetics. So they're so similar that if one little microbe gets loose, it's going to be able to find the same door into every single immune system, and it could just wipe out the entire herd.
So I want to just summarize here before we take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk more with Nathaniel Johnson about his wonderful article, The Swine of the Times. But what we're saying here is that we have bred pigs to such an extent where we'll have entire animal farms with pigs with...
basically the exact same genetics.
And that have to be kept indoors and that are so susceptible to disease that they're kept in a sterile environment, because if they're not, if they're allowed to have contact with a pig from another farm, one could get sick, and if one gets sick, they're all going down. And that's a very – that doesn't strike me as a very good – you know, we talk about safety of the food supply. That doesn't strike me as a very good way to achieve that goal.
I can see the movie now, The Bubble Pig.
We'll come back in just a moment. Our guest is Nathaniel Johnson. We're talking about the Swine of the Times, and you're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The maragatta and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest is Nathaniel Johnson. He has written a wonderful article in Harper's called Swine of the Times, The Making of a Modern Pig. Let's talk, Nathaniel, about the modern pig. We learned before the break that in a modern pig farm, the pigs are kept all indoors. They have pretty much identical genetics, which means that we have to keep huge, almost like a sterile operating room.
That if one of them gets sick, it's very, very likely that all of them will
get sick. So these are pigs, basically, that we're getting meat from. These pigs couldn't live in nature, right? They'd all just die.
They would have a very hard time if they went outside. Not only would they be susceptible to disease, like we talked about, they'd also get really cold. The pigs have been bred to be so lean at this point that they've lost most of their back fat, which was the sort of nice insulating blanket that they had and could survive, you know, the Minnesota winters. Now they don't have that anymore. They just have a little bit of fat, and so they need to have temperature controls.
Now, Nathaniel, I mean, obviously this is a very small segment of the pig farms that we're talking about do things this way. Can you tell our listeners approximately what percentage of pig farms operate like this?
About 99%.
I love it when Mark's facetious like that. That's my favorite. It's
99. I mean, it's just it is. This is how nearly all of the pork that is raised in this country is produced, and we're producing it in a way that if you introduce one
pathogen
and a normal pathogen that might be on your clothes in any given day, you could wipe out an entire pig farm.
Right. Now, I think it's important to note, though, that there's good reasons why 99% of the farms are like this at this point.
Why is that?
You have huge gains in efficiency and in uniformity. Uniformity is not something that's normally found in nature, and so the reason this happened is you can create identical pork chops. You know, you have identical genetics. You can create identical pork chops and distribute them all across the world.
You know what? Every pork chop shouldn't be the same. Every pork chop shouldn't be the same.
You know,
it shouldn't.
We're going to have to take a break. We'll come back and talk more. Remember, cheaper isn't always better, and sometimes cheaper can really – making that cheaper product can really hurt the whole planet, and there are hidden costs that aren't necessarily reflected.
We're
going
to come back and talk about the pitfalls of what could happen to the pig supply.
Back after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys, a Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Nathaniel Johnson is a freelance journalist based out of San Francisco. He covers a lot of topics, especially topics having to do with the nexus of science, technology, the environment, culture, and agriculture. Sounds like us, doesn't it, Mark?
Yeah, a little bit. So, Nathaniel, before the break, we were talking about the fact that what has become most important to us is that our pork is very lean and that every pork chop tastes the same and that it doesn't matter what season it is or what time of year or what the pigs are eating.
And that the pork
that,
be the
that
other...
That everyone be exactly the same and that pork be the other white meat, lean and supposedly good for you.
Right. And it's interesting because that is in some ways it's an admirable goal. We're creating a lot of meat very cheaply and giving that to people. But the question I have to ask is that the world that we want to live in? Mm-hmm. Do we want to live in a world that basically everything functions like a factory and everything our food on up is commodified? You know, if you are what you eat and your mm-hmm. food is commodified, you know, what does that make you?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, you know, and there are a lot of dangers that we can get into as far as what this potentially does to our food supply. Let's forget about the health aspects of this. Let's forget about the fact that it's unnatural. Let's forget about the fact that it's inhumane way to breed animals. And let's just talk about this from a food source issue. Okay, one of the things you wrote in your article and that I gleaned from your very well-written article was that basically we could in this country, if we wanted to, have 50 pig farms supply enough pork for the entire country.
Right.
Okay, so now one of the other things you said is what we're doing here is there is no biodiversity in each of these pig farms. So
right.
We could have basically one pathogen, one flu, one problem come along and wipe out, okay, if it came and into one pig farm, wipe out 4% of the pork in the United States. And if it moved from place to place to place, do much more damage than that. Is that inherently one of the risks that come about from farming this way?
Well, we're not there yet. But you're right. This is something that... that economists have thought about, and it's potentially a problem. If we do continue along this road far enough where the meat industry gets more and more consolidated, you start to run into dangers like that.
But we're pushing the small farmers off of their farms and you know, forcing people into these large farms, aren't we?
Absolutely. There's more and more small farmers that are either getting big or getting out. So that's certainly the situation.
You know, and just to sort of touch upon what Mark talked about, we talk about food security, you know, in this era in which we live. If you have five types of pigs, five different genetic types of pig, now that's a bit of an exaggeration, but not much, and you have, you know, five meat concerns that control all the pork in the country, well, then that's a heck of a lot easier target to disrupt the American food supply than if you have thousands of small farmers raising pigs, you know, on small farms.
And some that are immune to certain things and some that are immune to other things.
And the other thing I just want to bring up is that we're, you know, our focus is the restaurant business. And, you know, we're talking about sustainability here, but we have a wild boar on our menu that's raised by a small farmer. It is not the other white meat. It is a red meat.
Right. It's actually red. Imagine that.
And it is delicious. And I remember my mom used to take the lean pork chop and put it under the broiler at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm Irish, you know, and put it under the broiler at 2 o'clock in the afternoon until it and it was just this dried out piece of nothing that we put a can of sauerkraut on to get some moisture back in
there.
Well,
that's sort of the amazing thing about all this is all of this innovation and all of this work has led to a really kind of awful tasting piece of meat.
Yeah.
And by breeding for leanness and by breeding for uniformity, we get all this meat that has this problem called pale, soft, exudative, meaning that it gets very acidic and you fry it up, and it turns into something that serves better as a weapon than as a scale.
I think I used that against my sister when I was a kid.
But so what's happened now? What are we doing to now? Now we're marinating these meats in advance in order to in the package before you ever buy them.
Right. They pump them full of saline solution.
Right. Well, the nice thing is then they sell you a saline solution at $4.59 a pound.
Exactly.
You know, and of course when you put the saline solution pumped pork in the pan, it of course comes right out, and you're back with the same dried piece of meat that you would have had if they never pumped it full of saline solution.
Right.
Talk to us about, I mean, obviously it's in the interest of big business to have these big farms with very similar, easily machinable pigs, which is one of the things they want. But we're talking about, and if you weren't listening earlier in the show, pig farms where you basically need to dress like you're going into an operating room to go into the confinement places where they keep the pigs because they're so susceptible to disease. A lot of these pigs are dying. Now, there's a mortality rate fairly high for all of these tremendous efforts that people are putting forth to keep them sterile. Is that true?
It is a big problem. And you just sort of wonder, there's all this technology that's gone in this one direction and pushing the research in this one direction. And you wonder if there'd been technology research going in sort of a more diversified direction, if we couldn't have made some of the same gains in productivity without necessarily having all these problems with disease.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, I just think that one of the things that we've created is an artificially low market, and you talk about, you know, the chickenization of the pork market.
Right.
But our prices for chicken and pork right now are artificially low.
Right.
Yeah.
And they should be more expensive than they are. And we should just understand that the price of pork and chicken to do that the right way is a little bit more expensive than it is for these massive
farms. And even
if
it's twice as expensive, wouldn't you rather have good tasting pork one time a week rather than lousy tasting pork twice a week or three times a week?
Well, that's sort of how we're built to eat as well. You know, people aren't really built to be eating meat every single day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not healthy.
Well, you touched on something before that you read about in your book, that I wrote about in your book, that I thought was very interesting. You talked about the ways that Monsanto and these big companies are coming up with sort of gadgets to keep their pigs from getting sick and dying. Can you tell us about some of that?
Well, when you're working with genetics, you can sort of breed in one direction. So you can pick one trait and you can breed for that. So if you want to pick how much meat a pig puts on, then you breed in that direction as far as you can. But the problem is that all these other traits start cropping up, like disease resistance maybe goes down the tube, or the stability of the pig when it's standing on concrete all day. So the structure of the pigs has gotten much worse. They're simply not strong enough at this point, a lot of them, to survive for more than about 10 years standing on concrete. And usually it's 3 years max that the pigs will survive.
Mm-hmm.
So they're starting to realize that they've gone too far in this way, and they're trying to do the same thing, sort of a technological genetics fix for this problem.
Wild.
Nathaniel, can you do me a favor? And we're going to be taking a break in just a little while, but what I'd really like you to do is come back and give people a real picture of what today's pig farms look like, and have people kind of get an overview of what they should expect if they go to a pig farm and what's going on with the animals
and,
there.
And the other thing we're going to do when we come back is we're going to talk about some alternatives. Heritage pork, which we use at our restaurants, boar, you know, breeding boars and sows instead of artificial insemination, and literally the meat that you get from doing things that way is red. It's not white, and it is.
It's
I'm
40
say,
times more flavorful. I mean, just
really.
Just ridiculous.
Right. It's almost like not the same.
It's
animal.
Not the same animal.
All right, we have to take a short break. We'll come back with Nathaniel Johnson talking about his wonderful article in Harper's called "Swine of the Times: The Making of the Modern Pig." You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Economy Paver and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Nathaniel Johnson. His article in Harper's is Swine of the Times, The Making of the Modern Pig.
Nathaniel, I don't want to completely gross out our listeners, but I do want people to have an understanding of what they should what these farms are like and how the pigs are treated and how much space they have in these kind of agribusiness farms that are being created where as you said 99% of the pork in the country
called
is produced.
Confinement pork operations.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you probably wouldn't know it was a farm. You're going to drive up and you'll see these sort of long warehouse like buildings that look like, you know, maybe someone's manufacturing sprockets or something like that, building planes. And they have these big fans sticking out of the walls because they have to have air movement through. Mm-hmm. So they kind of look like jet engines along the side of the walls. You probably wouldn't be able to get very close to them because they often have big fences around them for biosecurity to keep you from bringing diseases onto the farm. But if you were able to go inside, you'd go in. It's at white plastic walls, usually. There's the hum of machinery there present. You might have to shower before you went in. And then inside, there's different sections of hog operations. You start with the farrowing room where the pigs give birth. And so there's the mother pigs there with their piglets. The mother pigs are in these stalls, which are about... They're basically cages that are about 3 feet by 6 feet. So they can't turn around. They can stand up and they can lie down. And it sort of forces them to lie down slowly because another trait that's been lost with intensive breeding is mothering ability. The pigs will often just sort of flop down. And if they do that, they'll crush their piglets. Yeah. So these cages force them to kind of ease their way down. And they're, depending on the farrowing operation, there's, you know, anywhere from 12 to 100 pigs in a room with all their piglets. And there's usually slatted floors, which allow the waste to fall through into the basement where it gets flushed out.
Mm-hmm. To a huge lagoon of manure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is another interesting thing that we have this tremendous waste problem now, and these pigs used to just be running around on the ground, fertilizing it.
And in your article you mentioned what you would have is generally a cornfield or some other field, and you would take the manure and mix it with dirt and use it as fertilizer, and then it would grow whatever it was going to grow. You'd feed it to the pigs, and it created a biocycle.
Exactly. And now you have this huge problem of disposing of waste, and every once in a while, you know. This has become less of a problem now, but, you know, in North Carolina a few years back, there were all these stories where these lagoons would break and rupture. and there'd be this biblical flood, you know, to this town, you know.
Of you know what.
Right, exactly. And you also have the problem of having to manufacture fertilizer from using petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
So there's several problems with that. The other part of the operation, then you have a gestation room where you have all the pregnant sows waiting to give birth, and they're this would just be lines upon lines of sows, each in a small crate, so that they can't. When you package them up in these big rooms, they tend to get kind of antsy, and they'll sometimes attack each other. So they put them in these crates where they can just sort of stand up and lay down and not turn around or anything, and then they don't fight with each other, and all they can do is sort of concentrate on eating and growing. When you go into these places, the smell is amazing. It's like ammonia.
By amazing, you don't mean good.
Right.
Okay, you're not thinking sizzling bacon.
It's just amazing in that it's shocking.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of straightens your hair out and
burns your eyes.
It burns your eyes and sticks with you for a couple days if you haven't been careful to change your clothes and shower really well. And they, when you go in, the pigs will kind of freak out because they're sitting in this place and they're not used to this seeing people.
Because we don't have time to really go too much further into it. But I mean, let's think about what we just talked about. You bred out. I don't know if any of you found this as disturbing as me, but we just heard from Nathaniel that you've bred out mothering ability. Okay, mm-hmm. You've bred a pig that will crush its own babies. Okay. You've bred a pig
that will kill other pigs
because
if it's put in the same area and cannibalize them.
And you've bred a pig and you're keeping it for its whole life in a cage where it can't turn around. Okay, I mean this is not how I'm not a particularly religious person, but this is not how God wanted us to raise the animals. This is not what in Genesis when he said, you know, you husband the earth, this is not what he meant for us to do, and it's wrong. It's just wrong.
All of the pork, and we haven't even talked about chicken today, but this is how almost all the pork and chicken that we eat in our daily lives is produced.
We have to take a quick break. Nathaniel, stick with us, please, and we'll talk about some of the alternatives that people can turn to, because there are alternatives out there when we come back from the break. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 14. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, stage left in Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants. Our guest today is Nathaniel Johnson. He is a writer about science, technology, environment, culture, and agriculture, and we're talking about his article, which appears in Harper's Swine of the Times, The Making of the Modern Pig. We've talked about how, you know, the agribusiness pig, the stuff you mostly find on your supermarket shelf, is not how it's produced. And if you're okay with that, well, go ahead, have some, but I'm not buying you a beer. Let's talk about some of the alternatives available. We have wild boar on our menu. We buy Neiman Ranch pork, and there, if you see the word heritage pork, you can go to Heritage Foods USA, and they have some great heritage breeds of pork.
Called D'Artagnan also has a lot of heritage breeds of pork. You can buy that in a lot of major supermarkets.
You can find both of those on our websites as well. What's your advice for people who want to not participate in this sort of pork production and eating of this side of pork, but still like pork?
Right. It's really hard to find information about where different foodstuffs come from in this era of globalization because we're shipping things all over the country and all over the world. And so one thing that I do is I just find a restaurateur or a person at a market that I can trust and count on that person to do that background research. And, you know, it's just a wonderful thing to be able to go into a restaurant and know that you're going to be getting top quality ethically produced food.
Wow. And there are a lot of good people out there with a lot of good information about where the food comes from. It's
good
funny.
Option.
We have a second restaurant, Kathleen Lombardi, where we serve more traditional Brooklyn Italian fare, and we use Berkshire pork in that restaurant. And what we've had to do is explain to our customers that the pork chop that we serve in the restaurant is going to be red.
Right. Why is this pork chop red? Is it going to make me sick? No.
People are actually afraid of when they see pork that's actually got red color to it.
Yeah, it's really become this misnomer that white pork is better for you. Actually, the Japanese tend to buy up all of our good dark pork, and we get the leftovers.
And so did Catherine Lombardi and Stacey Lester. Go there. Sorry for the shameless plug. Hey, Nathaniel, we have to leave it there because the news is coming up. It's been great to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us today, Nathaniel.
Okay, it's in Harper's. You can go pick it up. Swine of the Times, The Making of the Modern Pig by Nathaniel Johnson. I hope that you've enjoyed listening to The Restaurant Guys for the last hour. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.